Are you ready for the entertainment experience of a lifetime? Knockdown, Dragout, hard-hitting conversations, debates, and interviews. Well, if you said yes to any of these questions, sit back, relax, and enjoy something like no other. This is the Isolation Series Podcast, presented by the Scott Robles team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate, by WellbeingsPerformance.com for all your online meeting needs, by Barbarian Steakhouse, Canada's premier upscale restaurant. For more information, go to Barbarians.com. By ImprintPilates.com Toronto and the Greater Toronto Area's premier Pilates studio. And by the Toronto Immune and Digestive Health Institute. For more information, go to TIDHI.ca. Here now is your host, Spencer Miller.
Hey guys, and welcome to another edition of the Isolation Series with me, Spencer Miller. Very pleased to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Paul Shields. And Paul, it is Thursday, April 25th, 2024, and let's jump right into it with a couple of news and notes. First and foremost, a big, big shout out and a tremendous, tremendous amount of respect goes out to the legendary voice, Bob Cole, who passed away earlier today at the age of 90. What an unbelievable life he led. What an unbelievable career he had. And as we have talked about on the Isolation Series over the last couple of weeks with Vern Lundquist and John Sterling retiring respectively, he was the soundtrack to so many for hockey in Canada. And, you know, whether it is Joe Sakic scores, or it is all happening, oh baby, or any number of other calls of his that are legendary that I'm not going to butcher right now. Bob Cole was just what hockey was for so many people.
Yeah, I mean, he was the voice of a sport for basically an entire country, right? I think that anyone that is our age or older, even slightly younger, because I mean, like, what did he do his last game in 2019? So you're talking about a voice that spans literally generations of hockey fans in Canada. So his voice is the soundtrack to some of the highest highs in sport fan history and some of the lowest lows, right? He was the voice that probably one of the first voices I heard calling NHL hockey. And like you said, there's countless times and countless calls that have his voice in it. Some people don't even realize how connected to the sport of hockey they are, thanks to Bob Cole and the way that he painted a picture of the game. I think it's a sad day for hockey fans, but it's a life to be celebrated. You know, making it to 90 is no joke. That is a man who lived a full life. And I think that, you know, I send my best wishes to his friends and family. And I hope that they're able to take at least a little bit of solace in knowing just how many lives were touched and how many, you know, lifetime fans of the game of hockey were created thanks to the way that Bob Cole did his job at the very highest of levels. So sad day for hockey fans, for his friends and family and people all over the world who appreciate his work, but a life worth celebrating for sure.
And, you know, one of my other favorite calls of his, I forget what fight it was, but he just said it's all happening, and the inflection in his voice while they were punching each other at 150 miles an hour, it felt like, that always sticks out to me too. So hats off to Bob Cole for a great career, a great life. And a little known fact that he always talked about is his love for curling. He loved curling so much as well. So I don't know if you knew that, but that's a little nugget of Bob Cole right there for you too.
There you go. I didn't know that. So see, after all these years, you can still learn something about a person who spent you know, just as much time in my home and every home in the country for so many years, right? Bringing us the game that we all love.
Right. And continuing with hockey, I want to get your thoughts on something that you and I were fortunate to be in the building for last night, and that is the first home game of the series between the Boston Bruins and the Toronto Maple Leafs in Toronto. You and I said live and in person last night that there were some horrible calls and everything like that. Ultimately, the Bruins came out on top. What were your thoughts of last night as a whole?
Yeah, I think two things can be true, right? The refereeing was atrocious last night, but you know what to expect. And the truth is that the calls could be completely different and go completely against a team like Boston in the next game. So you cannot blame the referees for the Leafs' loss last night. Unfortunately, in goaltending and in special teams in the power play, Boston was the better team. 5-on-5, the game was very close, right? The Leafs, I know that, you know, I've heard some conversation today about maybe they looked a little, you know, timid or passive last night. I didn't necessarily feel that way. I thought that there were some play. I thought the first line was really good. I thought the third and fourth lines looked like they were engaged in the game. I thought the problem, unfortunately, landed on the second line. And I think that Mitch Marner's receiving a lot of criticism today for what was maybe one of the worst games I've seen him play. Certainly the worst game I've seen him play with my own eyes live in the building. But I think we're seeing the tale of a series of teams that are very similar in the sense of their similar skill sets, similar talent levels. And right now what's making the difference is Boston's goaltending and Boston's power play. That first goal, while there 100% should have been at least one whistle, if not two, considering that Matthews got dragged to the ice behind the net and Bertuzzi literally had the feet taken right out from under him, regardless of whether there should have been a whistle or not, that's a short side shot from outside the circle with no screen that Samsonov just lets go right through him. So while I think the Leafs need to do better than scoring two goals and their power play needs to sort itself out, that is not a goal that can go in an NHL playoff game. It was bad. And so you put together the combination of a bad night from one of your top players, a horrible night for your power play, and an only okay night for your goalie. And that's what it's going to look like. It's going to look like a loss. And now you have an extra day between now and Saturday's game. So they got to regroup. You hope that's enough time for William Nylander to be back in the lineup, because I think that his absence on the power play makes it much easier for Boston to, hone their attack on Austin Matthews and not give him any time and space. And I think that it's pretty clear right now that the Bruins don't see Marner as a threat. They're doing is overwhelming him until he coughs up the puck. And unfortunately he's coughed up the puck. Another huge factor in that, in one of the goals, I can't remember if it was a first or a second goal, but he turned over the puck at the offensive blue line,
second
creating
goal.
The whole problem. Yeah. On the second goal. Yeah. So there's just some big mistakes being made by their key players right now. And so they need to clean that up. And now you got a couple of days to sort it out before they get a chance to split this set of games and turn it into a best of three.
It came out earlier today that William Nylander is suffering from, quote, severe migraines. And we all know who have suffered from migraines before that, of course, they can be debilitating and everything like that. Nobody's questioning that. And obviously with the bright lights on the ice and the reflection of the lights, I can understand why you keep him out.
Well, just before you finish your thought, Spence, that's the best that we have. It was reported by Elliot Freeman, but again, there is not a whole lot of information and the Leafs aren't giving any. So that is the best guess that we have. Just to be really clear, it hasn't officially been reported or said by the Leafs or Nylander.
Okay. Okay. So in speculation, but from a pretty reliable source overall, in Elliot Friedman. But getting back to the initial question, though, is how would you handle it if that is the case moving forward in the series, now knowing that you're down 2-1? By no means is the series done yet, but William Nylander, as we've said multiple times leading into this series, has been one of the most productive players for you all year, and is pretty much an Iron Man minus this debilitating whatever it is that he's dealing with over the last 3 or 4 games. How would you handle it as far as William Nylander is concerned?
Well, I mean, I think you have to be ultra cautious, right? If it is a migraine issue, that opens the door for the possibilities of a concussion that was undiagnosed, or a neck issue that is under an underlying issue, right? I think it creates a lot of question marks, right? It's a little bit easier if it's a broken bone or a pulled muscle or something like that, right? It's a little bit easier to, you know, to find the symptoms and diagnose the problem and create a bounce back plan. And I think it gives us a lot of insight as to why Nylander's struggling, why he can skate during the day for a certain degree, and then he's unable to, right? Anytime you're dealing with anything that goes on with the head, you're talking about potential dizziness or loss of balance or loss of perception, all of those things that migraines can do. So I feel for him, you know, having suffered migraines myself and neck issues myself. Spencer, I mean, you know all about issues with the neck and how that can affect your head. So I'm hopeful that it's, you know, not something more serious. But from a William Nylander perspective, you have to get that player right? You got to get him right before you can get him out there on a very physical sport where your head gets rattled around a lot, right? And I don't mean like hits to the head, obviously. We don't want to see that. Those are illegal. But just the very fact of taking a body check or the speed at which the game is played, like, you have to be right. So I they're going to work on that. As far as from a team perspective, you know, I think you have to take the positive from this. Yes, you're down 2-1 and as far as the series goes, but you played a really good game 2, probably should have won that game by more than a goal, right? You in game 1, you really only had one bad period that sort of sunk you. And in game 3, you were only out of it by one goal until a later empty net goal, right? You've been able to play sort of stride for stride without one of your very best players and one of your top point producers. So you have to go out and you have to stick to the game plan, whatever that is. Continue to stick to the game plan. I'd certainly like to see Sheldon Keefe deploy the roster a little bit differently. I that's one of my biggest frustrations and complaints when it comes to Sheldon Keefe. However, that's, you know, my opinion. He's the coach. That's fine. But I do think that the team does not look like a team that's out of this series. There's definitely work to do, but I would take it as a positive that you've been able to skate stride for stride so far with no William Nylander.
Right. And obviously Boston, from the Boston perspective, stuck with their rotation of goaltenders that they've been doing all year, despite what happened in game 2. They put Swayman back in there in a rotation, which makes you think, is Allmark going to play on Saturday in keeping with the same rotation? And on that same note, on the Maple Leaf side of things, do you look now, because you are down 2-1, not to say that Ilya Samsonov has played awful by any means whatsoever, but to your own admission earlier on in this very show, you said that he just played okay last night. So because of that, do you look at Joseph Woll and say, here you go, Joe, we're going to give you an opportunity to play the game on Saturday and see what you got?
I don't think so. I think still Samsonov has been the better goalie since Joseph Woll returned from injury. He has yet to play a game that he hasn't allowed at least 4 goals. So I don't see them making that change. Unfortunately or unfortunately, depending on your opinion, I think that Samsonov's play, while in my opinion, games one and game three, he was okay. In game three, he made some good saves. Don't get me wrong. Like, it's not that he played poorly. It's that he let in a bad goal when they needed a big save. And that's, you know, so that can be very frustrating. But I don't know that it's enough to take him out of the net. I'll be really surprised. And I think Sheldon Keefe has shown that he is very stubborn when it comes to how he's going to deploy the personnel on the team. And I don't see him going away from Sammy. I think another factor, too, is that Wall has not been very good against the Bruins in his career. He's been just okay. So I don't know what kind of upgrade you'll be getting to go to Samsonov, away from Samsonov and to Joseph Wall. But again, we're going to find out. I think that over the next couple of days, there's going to be lots of decisions that need to be made. But if I'm breaking down the reasons that the Maple Leafs lost last game, Samsonov is lower on my list. I would be much more concerned with guys like Marner, who, quite frankly, he does so much for this team when he's going well. He's on both special teams. He's on, you know, he's a monster when it comes to 5-on-5 points. But we have not seen Mitch Marner in this series yet. We saw a glimpse of it on the Leafs' first goal. That's what he can do when he's playing at his highest level. But then, unfortunately, on the second goal, we saw what happens when he's out of his rhythm. And I would say right now, he is dramatically out of rhythm.
Right. Only time will tell. Game four on Saturday, as mentioned. I want to get your thoughts on the other action in the NHL from last night. First, are you surprised that the Vegas Golden Knights were able to go into Dallas and secure a 2-0 series lead? Because we know, right?
You mean the Vegas Golden Knights that suddenly have a healthy Alex Pietrangelo, Noah Hanifin, Thomas Hertl, and Mark Stone?
That's correct.
That same team? Yeah, no, I'm not surprised at all. That's a first place team that landed in the seventh spot or whatever, first wild card, second wild card, whatever it happened to be, because of injury, and now they've got all, now they're healthy, miraculously healthy again. So no, it doesn't, they're the Stanley Cup champions. And as far as the team themselves, they the only player they lost from last year was Riley Smith. And again, they were able to add like huge pieces at the deadline because of what I'll lovingly call shenanigans. And I've been on this show and I've said before, they are not breaking any rules. This is within the allowable rules of the NHL. But I can see why they're sort of the bad guys, why they're playing the wrestling heel in this playoff series, because, you know, Dallas's reward for playing as well as they did in the regular season, for finishing first or second in the division, is a team that basically added, you know, top pairing D and 2/3 of a top line in the, you know, magically off the IR. So I do understand the frustration there.
Yes. And moving to your other favorite team, and a team that has a lot of interest, not only by us, but by a lot of people in Canada, and that is the Edmonton Oilers, barely lost 5-4 in overtime with another interesting game between LA and Edmonton. Nice to see that LA was able to pick themselves up off the mat from game one, where it seemed pretty lopsided overall, even though they did get back into it there for a short period of time. This seemed like a very more balanced game overall, from what I saw from the highlights. If you are Chris Knobloch, Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Zach Hyman, and the Edmonton Oilers, do you just flush it now and say, you know, we almost won that, we should have won that, but we didn't. Now we're going to LA in a couple of days, and we have to remind people who we are.
No, I don't think you have to remind anybody. I think the game plan doesn't change for Edmonton at all. They need to score the first goal. They need to not get themselves down 2 or 3 goals, because I think you play right into LA's hands when you allow that. And I think that the Oilers, well, they've come a tremendous way as far as a defensive team goes. I think much like the Leafs, some of the criticisms about the Oilers and their defensive structure is a little bit lazy and outdated. They have holes on the defense, but I think that can be said of a lot of very good NHL teams. But where the Kings are so different is they are so committed to that 1-3-1 trap style game. When they have a lead, they have no problem just strangling the life out of a team. Edmonton has tremendous talent.
Didn't you say on the show earlier this week that they are the modern day version of the New Jersey Devils with Larry Robinson and stuff back in the day?
They really are, to me anyway, when they have a lead. I think people might mistake that for them not being a dynamic team that can generate offense. That's not true. This Kings team can generate offense. They can be very dynamic, but when they have a lead, they like to play lockdown hockey. And if not for some, you know, penalties and a very good power play that Edmonton's power play is nearly unstoppable. If not for those power plays, right, LA probably wins that game in regulation. It's only because of the elite talent and because of the absolute skill level that Edmonton possesses that they were able to keep their feet moving, get some calls that go in their favor, and get back into the game and force overtime. So, I there's not a whole lot I would have changed about the Edmonton game. I think you have to be really mindful of, making those early mistakes and giving LA a chance to get a one or a two goal lead. And I think too, Stuart Skinner, I think, has another gear. I think that if you look at games one and two, he's kind of in that same category as Samsonov, right? He's been just okay. He's made some good saves, but he's also, there's been a couple goals that you would have liked to see a save on. So I think that there's room to grow for the Oilers, but I don't think there's going to be anything. I don't think they need any dramatic change. I think they just need to do what they do well and force the Kings to continue to have to play a more open style and not give them the opportunity to play that lockdown game.
Moving to tonight's action, very simply, I just want to ask you, do you believe that either one of these series goes from 2-0 to 2-1? Or do you believe that both of them will go to 3-0 and on the brink of elimination, respectively?
Oh man, I'm pretty sure I said on here that I think Washington is toast. I may have predicted a 5-game series, but if it was 4 games, I just think the Rangers absolutely outmatch Washington. Now, switching to home, coming back to home is an advantage for a lot of teams.
Let me just stop you right there though. Sure. New York plays Washington tomorrow and tonight.
Oh, sorry. We've got Florida Tampa tonight?
Yes.
Ah, okay. So anyways, we'll talk Rangers Washington more either later or whatever, but as far as Washington goes, I don't see that they might win one game, and if they do, it might be at home. As far as Carolina, the Islanders and the Islanders go, Islanders, I think they're one of the better teams at generating energy from their home ice. So it wouldn't surprise me to see them pick up a win tonight. Excited to be back on home ice, get a little bit of life. As far as Tampa and Florida goes, I just don't think we're talking about the same Tampa Bay Lightning. And while I don't think that Tampa's going to get swept, I don't see them coming back in this series. So whether they win tonight or they win in their next game, Florida is just, they look unstoppable right now from a playoff style hockey perspective. They are so dialed in to that board battle type game. They want to keep the puck along the boards as long as possible and grind you into dust. And they're doing that. So, I think you're starting to see some frustration from the Tampa Bay Lightning. Now they've been there before, so I'm not going to write them off for sure, but I think they've got a big hill to climb now, letting themselves go down 2-0.
Right. And moving to the Friday action, we already talked about the Rangers and Washington. I want to get your thoughts now on the Vancouver Canucks and Nashville Predators series. Nashville has proven that they are a hell of a fan base, especially when it comes to the playoffs. What do you make of what's going to happen tomorrow night in Game 3 in Nashville? Do you believe that Nashville takes a 2-1 series lead with Casey DeSmith more than likely still being in net for the foreseeable future of this series?
I think you're asking a lot of Casey DeSmith. I think Vancouver's a good enough team. I think they can make some adjustments, but this series went from, like, I predicted Nashville to upset Vancouver because not for any particular reason. I just didn't love the way that Vancouver matches up with Nashville's size and physical play. I thought Vancouver, would be relying on Demko more in this series than maybe any other series they would have to play. You know, if they were to get through playing Edmonton or playing LA, yes, of course your goalie has to be good, but Edmonton Vancouver feels like a little bit more of a run and gun type series. There's a lot of offensive firepower there. So I thought Nashville was going to be a real tough out for Vancouver. I think I picked them. I think I picked Nashville in an upset. So now you take away the Demko factor, and now you're relying on a backup goalie, and you have to protect him in a way that is totally different than a guy like Thatcher Demko. So with this series switching over to Nashville, I feel like this is Nashville's series to lose now.
Okay, and what do you make of the Winnipeg Jets and Colorado Avalanche? Winnipeg is going into the altitude to play in Denver, and I don't care what anybody says, but especially in the game of hockey, altitude can really make those lungs burn when you're on the ice and whatnot. Now, they're all professional, I get that, but do you believe that the altitude will be a little bit of an advantage for the Avalanche going into tomorrow's game, or do you think that Winnipeg could come back and reclaim series lead on the road?
I don't think that altitude bothers any of these professional athletes, if I'm being perfectly honest. I think these guys have been there before, particularly playing in the same division. So, I mean, yes, is it challenging? Sure. I don't discredit the fact that it's harder to do things at altitude, but I mean, these are pros. They'll figure it out. I don't see that being a huge factor. I think that this might be the best series so far in this first round. These teams are, they have this ability to counterpunch at one another in a way that's maybe unique to any of the other series. I think that Colorado will have a natural advantage of being at home. They've played very well at home this year. You think about Nathan McKinnon's insane point streak on home ice. You know, when you have that kind of confidence in one of not only the best player on the one of the best players on the team, but one of the best players on the planet, that I think that gives you some mojo. It gives you some confidence. So it wouldn't surprise me to see Colorado come out absolutely flying tonight, but I'll be very surprised if by the time we're headed back to Winnipeg, we don't have a 2-2 series. I think this is going to be another 7-game series. It really feels like a coin flip right now. I picked Winnipeg to go through, so I'm going to stick with my pick. But wouldn't surprise me to see Colorado take game 3 tonight. Or, excuse me, tomorrow night.
Yes. And last but certainly not least, on this Thursday, April 25th, 2024 edition of the Isolation Series, I just want to get your thoughts on something that I found unique and interesting, and maybe not in the most positive of ways. A couple of days ago, the Buffalo Sabres reintroduced Lindy Ruff as their next head coach. And anybody that follows hockey knows arguably the most successful era of Buffalo Sabres hockey came when Lindy Ruff was the coach between 1997 and 2013. Since 2013, he was let go. There have been 6 coaches in Buffalo, none of which have won a playoff game or even sniffed a playoff series, if memory serves correct. Are you surprised that it took them this long to bring back Lindy Ruff, who, like I said, whether you like him or you don't, and I'm not a big fan of him based on other things and stuff that we have talked about on this program before, can't deny his success during his first tenure with the Buffalo Sabres.
I mean, I to go back to it, but this, I think, speaks to a more broad problem in the NHL of recycling coaches over and over and over again.
The you're old telling boys me, club.
Yeah, you're telling me there's not a more qualified coach that they haven't already tried. I think this is a Buffalo Sabres problem. Now, that's to be clear, I like Lindy Ruff. I think he's a good coach. I think he'll do good things there. I don't think that he was the reason that New Jersey had the season they had. I was a little surprised to see him get fired this year, if I'm being honest, for a team that just had so many injuries and whatnot. But I mean, I don't know if I were a Sabres fan, I think I'd be wondering what the big difference is between him and the other 5 to 6 coaches that they have let go in recent years. Like, at some point you have to create some stability and say, look, it comes down to the players on the ice. So I'm not a big fan of the 2 and 3 year head coach being fired, you know, quickly. What did, you know, Don Granato have to do with the fact that the Buffalo goaltending was atrocious this year? What did Granato have to do with Tage Thompson being injured and, you know, not being able to replicate his incredible season from last year? I just think that there are holes in the build of that roster that no coach is going to be able to solve. Now, we're going into an off season. We know that teams can remake themselves and, you know, young players get another year under their belt and they get better and better, et cetera, et cetera. So I it's not to say that they can't jump and they can't take a step next year and be in the playoffs or be pushing for the playoffs. But I don't know that this is a coaching thing. And, while I don't begrudge anybody getting a job, like, congratulations to Lindy Ruff, it is surprising to me how often we seem to recycle the same names in all professional sports over and over and over again.
Right. And on that same note, just to go off of something that you said, how long or how much longer, in your opinion, do you think Sheldon Keefe gets an opportunity to coach the Toronto Maple Leafs, rightfully or wrongfully? I'm not saying he's done a bad job, because largely he has not, since taking over for Mike Babcock and whatnot. But at some point, you have to turn and say, okay, it's not working with this coach. I believe this is the 7th year under Keefe, if I'm not mistaken. And so let's say that the rest of the Bruins series does not go well for the Leafs once again over the next couple of games. When do you look at potentially making a head coaching change in Toronto?
Well, I'm gonna call you out. Don't age the poor guy just yet. This is year 5, and it's only his 3rd full season because of the weirdness of the 19-20 season and then the shortened season in the bubble. So
maybe that's why I think it's the 6th or 7th year.
But it feels longer. You're absolutely right. It feels longer, but I think that Sheldon Keefe is, personally, I think he's operating on borrowed time. And I think that if you see another early exit, like if the Leafs are out in the first round, I don't know that they'd fire him right away. I wonder if it's more of a situation of what happened with Mike Babcock, where next season they start with Sheldon, but you start to see that some of his safety nets start to get pulled out from under him, right? If you remember when Babcock was going into his last year before he got let go in 1920, he was like the whole assistant coaching staff got replaced. Basically all of his quote unquote, his guys were gone from around him and there were new voices there. Now the Leafs have done a little bit of that. Obviously they lose Spencer Carberry to a head coaching job in Washington. They bring in Guy Boucher. But I'd be wondering about, you know, Dean Janot and Manny Malhotra. I'd be wondering about some of those guys that weren't brought in by Tre Living when he came. if they're going to still stick around. And I think that the Leafs, I think that the seat that Sheldon Keefe sits in has never been hotter than it is now. I believe he'll make it through the offseason regardless of what happens. But if they have a short run, I think the leash is going to be real, real short. And we might be talking in, you know, November about him being an early season casualty of a Maple Leafs team that hasn't met expectations. But I think that they just signed him to that 2-year extension in the offseason. I think Treliving isn't going to make any rush decisions based on one season. But I don't think it's going to, I don't think he's going to have the patience that he maybe had this year when there were some questions about Keefe's job security earlier in the year.
So let's play hypothetical here then, as we tend to do occasionally on the isolation series. If he does make it through the offseason and they do a November early casualty, like you say, who would be somebody that you would look at to replace him? And again, this is all hypothetical, but if you were the person in charge and didn't want to go the recycled route that we just talked about with Lindy Ruff, who would you look to bring in as the new voice?
I mean, I'm not as up to date on the sort of up and comers as far as coaches go, so I might not be the best guy to answer a question like this. But for me, like, I think about guys of the Jay Woodcroft type class, if you will, right? I think Woodcroft and Keefe are probably similar in the sense that they're younger coaches that are, you know, respected throughout the league as good coaches. So I would think that it would be, I would hope for somebody like that, but let's be real. It's going to be, you know, there's going to be clamoring for coaches like, I don't know, like Laviolette or like, you know, the Daryl Sutters of the world. Not that I want him to come to Toronto or anywhere.
Barry Trotz.
Yeah. I mean, he's the GM and president in Nashville. So, I mean, he's not leaving that to go behind a bench, I don't think. But I think that there will be an outcry from Leaf fans that we need to have a quote unquote harder coach. And I mean, I don't know that. I think you're getting into a different debate about what motivates the modern athlete. And I don't know. I think it's interesting. I don't have a great answer for that. I wish that I did, but I think there's going to be some names out there. Like, you know, Marco Sturm is a name from the AHL, who's been getting some buzz, obviously former NHLer. Ryan Warsofsky from the San Jose Sharks assistant coach, he got some interviews last year when there was head coaching jobs available. So, I mean, like, there's a couple names that I know that might get a look, but I fear that we're just going to be talking about some old name that we've heard a million times.
Like your favorite, Ron Wilson, in his second stint as head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
You know, there's not a whole lot of things that could drive me away from watching this team. I have watched this team through some of the worst times. I have cheered for and have been hopeful for this team when it absolutely looked bleak. But if we went back to a guy like Ron Wilson, that might be the final straw for me, Spence.
And remind the wonderful listeners and viewers of our program why that is.
Because he's an ass. He's an absolute joke, as far as I'm concerned. Show me what that guy did to get the credit he got for as long as he did. Never mind how combative he was with the media and with the players. He's just a prick, as far as I'm concerned. Look, and I want to be really clear. I don't know the man personally. I'm talking about him as a head coach and as the public persona with which he presented to the world for as long as he did. He's not my guy. That's
okay.
So
if he was on your next head coaching ballot, you would not check his name, is what you're saying to everybody.
No. I would ask for a new ballot.
Okay, great. And to close out today's program, I just want to put a positive spin on things here after talking about Ron Wilson being an ass, and say, you know, we talk about it periodically as we go along here on the Isolation series, how much we appreciate our audience and our sponsors, and that rings true every day for the reasons that I always say. We appreciate you watching and or listening wherever it is that you're doing so, and we want to send a big shout out to our sponsors, without whom we wouldn't be able to do this as often as we do. That is all great and everything like that, but the fact that we have done almost 360 episodes of the program now, Paul, you and I talked about it a little bit off air. That in itself is astonishing, not for anything other than the fact that I can't believe that people actually still like to listen to us, but here we are.
Yeah, it's great. You know, I've said this before when we've sort of talked about doing this and how long we've been able to do it and how much fun we have doing it, but whether you've listened to one episode or nearly 360 episodes, we're so happy to have you here. I'm so glad that you'll spend a little time listening to really two old friends chop it up about sports, entertainment, whatever we feel like talking about. And, you know, it's not lost on me how grateful I am to have the opportunity to do this. And you know, if nothing else, Spence, if not a single person listened, it would give you and I a great excuse to chat and chop it up and that.
And hear our own voices, really.
And hear our own voices. Hear our, yeah. You know, our debonair tones, silky tones coming through your podcast device.
Yes. Wasn't that Victoria's theme music back in the day for WWE 2? Voices in my head, whatever it was. Yeah. There you
that
go.
Was. Got it.
Keeping with the positive vibes here, I would be remiss if I did not mention the fact that, yes, Paul and I were at the game last night and we did get a chance to see each other. But full disclosure, I did not know that Paul was coming up to me to say hello. And then I got a random bear hug and quickly thought to myself, who the bleep is hugging me? And then I looked and it was him. So I was very thankful at that. But once again, ladies and gentlemen, Paul Shields scared me as only he likes to do from time to time.
Yeah, admittedly, I often forget that that I can make you jump, but bear hug is the appropriate term. It was nice to see you. Like I said, my record at Toronto Maple Leaf playoff games is not good, so they might be banning me from the building from now forward. So it's probably a good thing we got to see you when we did.
Yeah, and the thing is that not only have we found out that Crisscross can make you jump, but apparently so can Paul Shields in certain environments. But I digress. But for Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller. This has been another edition of the Isolation series for Thursday, April 25th, 2024. As I said, we appreciate you watching and or listening wherever it is that you are doing so. And we would like to send a big shout out once again to our sponsors, without whom we wouldn't be able to do this. And big shout out continues to go to Fade Room Toronto and Ferreira Signature Line. You want to make sure that you get all on top of that with regards to your grooming needs and haircutting needs, respectively. And until we come at you again with another fantastic edition of the show with Kyle Smith, regular on the show now on Monday, take care of yourselves and each other. Have a fantastic weekend. Bye-bye. And Paul, please tell people all about some more whole grain goodness that is us.
Folks, be sure to check us out on podbean.com by going to theisolationseries.podbean.com. There you'll find the audio-only versions of the podcast, including all of our past amazing interviews. One more time, that's theisolationseries.podbean.com. And hey, don't forget to follow us on Instagram. It's at @thespencermiller and at Pauly Shields, Pauly spelled P-A-W-L-Y. So find us on podbean.com, follow us on Instagram, and don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.
And once again, everybody, thank you for watching and or listening and supporting this thing we like to call the Isolation Series. For Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller, and we will see you again very, very soon. Bye-bye.